all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, thank you, Don Rue, and hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense. We've made it to Friday. It's April 7th, 2023. Coming up this morning, Carolyn Fiddler is going to join us. We haven't talked to her for some time. She writes a newsletter called State House Action, which is a state-by-state review of political goings-on. And it is definitely time to talk to her because what we have going on in this country right now is a state-by-state horror show of Republicans behaving badly. The most egregious example happening late yesterday in the Tennessee legislature, where the Republicans there actually expelled three Democratic members. Well, no, they tried to expel three Democratic members. They expelled the two black men and didn't expel the white woman. All of them up on the charge of protesting gun violence. And they said they were too disruptive and kicked these two black men out of the legislature, as if that's going to stop what happened in Tennessee with gun violence just days ago. The state capitol is just awash in young people and others as well who are sick and tired of gun violence, who want the legislature to do something. What did the legislature do? Kick out two black men on the Democratic side because they didn't like what they had to say. And the stuff that these Republicans said in doing so was so amazingly racist and tone deaf, but I guess, I hate to paint with a broad brush, but welcome to Tennessee. So we're going to talk a bit about that. In Kansas, Republicans have passed a new law allowing children's genitals to be examined if they want to play school sports. Florida Republicans are proposing a ban on talking about periods in school, just as young girls have questions. And so Carolyn will kind of lay out those things and all of the other things that are going on at the state level. We have talked about Wisconsin politics. You know, for 12 years, we seem to have been the epicenter of Republican bad behavior. And it doesn't take them off the hook at all for Act 10, for expelling one of Governor Evers' cabinet members and so forth. But we just wanted to show you why this is a national trend and why voters turned out so big in these last couple of big elections and probably will do so for some time to come. Sending a message to Republicans who seem to want to double down anyway and slide toward fascism at worst. We also have some proof during the show today that your vote matters. You specifically, your vote matters. We've looked at the dozens of school referendums that were on Tuesday's ballot, and you will be impressed, I think, at the difference between success and failure coming down to just a handful of votes in some of these districts. We will talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, about how national media covered Donald Trump's arrest and arraignment this week. And Dan Schumacher helps us talk sports as we wrap things up closer to the 8 o'clock hour when we turn over the keys of the Civic Media bus. To reach us here, our studio line number is 844-967-2789 and 715-388-7155. If you are listening to us either at WAUK in Waukesha, if you're listening in Oshkosh, if you're listening in Madison, I'm not saying it won't happen in Green Bay or someplace else, but you'd have to drive farther. But later this hour, we're going to give away two tickets to tonight's Brewers game, Brewers against the Cardinals. They open up a three-game series for the weekend, a Central Division battle, and you can get into it for free. And we gave some away a couple of days ago, and we got such a nice email back, including a photo of the ticket winners at the game. That was really nice. And we'd like to do that for you as well. So be listening to it during our history lesson and music break coming up in about 40 minutes or so. And again, when the time is right, you might want to call us 844-967-2789. Aaron Zommers is down in our Madison studio where we've had quite the week. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's been an interesting week. What with, the internet not working on Wednesday, and now the production computer just being off when I get here when normally it's on all the time. Must have been a default updated setting because our other producer said it's off when he gets in too, which is like half an hour to 90 minutes after I leave. And I definitely am not turning it off.
And it, as you know, it's not like a computer powers up, you know, at the, you know, in the blink of an eye. So sometimes it takes a little while here. And look, I've worked in tons of radio stations over the years. And when you get people coming and going and different employees, you know, unless you put a sticky note on everything, you're going to find some surprises now and then. And so that was my high tech human resources advice to Aaron, was just to put a sticky note on it saying, don't shut this off.
It is.
I hope it works. You think it will?
Well, I think it's shutting itself off. So I don't think.
Wait, what? You think the computer is shutting itself off?
Yeah, I think when we last updated it, it must have changed some settings.
Okay. So now you have to wonder, do you go in and try to change it and risk blowing things up? Or do you just leave it alone so that we don't have a day like we had on Wednesday again? You know, so it's kind of a, do you cut the red wire or the blue wire?
Well, I'm going to go with the red wire, but after we're done with shows for the day.
I think that might be a good way to go. All right. Well, we mentioned the Brewers are off, or were off yesterday, rather. St. Louis coming to town for a 3-game weekend series. Brandon Woodruff scheduled to pitch tonight for the Brewers. The Bucks are at home versus the Memphis Grizzlies. So it's a busy sports weekend in Milwaukee. And then on Sunday, the Bucks are at Toronto, and that will wrap up the regular season. All of the usual starters, Giannis, Middleton, and the rest probably getting rested tonight. Let's take a break, and then we'll hear from State Representative Ryan Clancy about housing issues, an interview we did on Wednesday, unfortunately, when there was no radio at that point. We did our online-only show, and we'll play back that conversation next on Up North News Radio. Friday morning on Up North News Radio, April 7th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Nice to have you along today. Our Up North News newsletter goes out most mornings. We set it to automatically send at 5:01 in the morning. So it's right there in your mailbox. You can sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Click on newsletter in the top banner. And this might be the fastest feedback we've ever received on an email, because today's newsletter includes a feature that says, where is Wisconsin's best fish fry? And one of our freelance writers, Kevin Revolinsky, says that since the 1890s, the Merrick family, rhymes with Derek, has had Merrick's Bar, and that he would say that that is some of the best fish fry that you will find. In virtually no time, we heard from Sean Powell of Deerbrook, saying, I live in Green Bay and I've been to Merrick for a fish fry and they're good, but you should also really check out Norm's Hollow. They are amazing. The portions are huge. I had their special, which was wild rice cod or haddock with beer cheese on top. It's amazing. Thought you just might want to check it out. So now I've got two fish fry options the next time I'm in that part of the woods. So thanks very much for writing in, Sean. We appreciate the quick feedback. So we've got to make the pivot here at some point. We are constantly, we rightly so, have been talking about the election for Supreme Court, and we've been talking about the issues that are involved in it. We've been talking so much about abortion rights. We've been talking about gerrymandering and fair maps. We've been talking about crime. But there are some very real problems that people face all across Wisconsin. These are problems in the housing area. They deal with the age of housing stock and refurbishing them. It deals with building new but affordable housing, not just the McMansions that go up in the suburbs. And there's that balance of rights between tenants and landlords. And for that especially, State Representative Ryan Clancy has been especially active, and we're happy to welcome him now to Up North News Radio. Representative Clancy, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Pat.
Why did Governor Evers put so many provisions related to affordable housing and housing security in his budget bill? Why was that a priority for him and for you?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm grateful that he put that in. He put it in because it works, because the data backs up that spending dollars on making sure that we have safe, affordable, and secure housing matters, and because it matters to folks all across Wisconsin. In Milwaukee County here, I was able to, in 2021, pass something called the Right to Counsel, which ensured that folks facing eviction would have an attorney. And it's a relatively small outlay of, and we were able to do it with the help of Milwaukee County, the City of Milwaukee, and the United Way. And we just got a report in last week from an independent third party firm, which affirmed what the data looks like all across the country, that for every dollar that you spend on this, you get more than $3 back. So it turns out that if you keep somebody from being evicted, or you help them get into other housing, which is more appropriate, or you encourage landlords to fix, you know, the problems at the properties, that you actually save a lot of money on the back end, because those people then don't need to find new school districts or jobs, or for us to provide services to somebody who is then homeless. So it's in the budget because it makes sense. It's pragmatic, and hopefully it's not partisan. Hopefully this stays in the budget because it really is a common sense solution.
Well, I'd like to think that it's a common sense solution, but I also know a bit about the makeup of the Republican majority here, and that there's at least one or two landlords in that bunch. And the governor even notes in introducing the provisions that between for a good 9-year period in the legislature, like more than 100 different changes had been made that by and large benefit the landlords over the tenants. Now, I think we want to make clear here, we're not talking about, free housing and that, it's all about stiffing landlords, but it really is more about better balance in the relationship between landlords and tenants. Because as we like to say to our Republican friends who always believe, it should be the free market and the private sector, not every employer is benevolent and not every landlord is benevolent either. And so it's worthwhile to have a fair process.
Absolutely. And when we passed it at Milwaukee County, what we saw was that it wasn't landlords on one side issue and tenants on the other. And in fact, it was widespread. What you saw were bad opposing it, but the good ones, the ones who were actually invested in the community, were really in favor of this in a way that that I found really heartening. And ultimately, it passed unanimously at the county level because it was not perceived as a partisan issue. And because the good landlords, the better landlords, understand that it's okay for tenants to have legal counsel. In fact, that actually smoothed things out because landlords almost all have access to lawyers and use those really effectively. What this report last week showed was that when tenants have access to landlords, that you see fewer summary judgments, that you see a lot more fairness in the system. And it isn't... it isn't always about just not having rent. In fact, the vast majority of cases, there is more going on than that. And often tenants do have access to the dollars, especially after their attorneys were able to get them direct rent assistance, things like that. But there are other issues with conditions with the properties, whatever else. The good landlords realize that, and they're happy to make sure that both sides have that legal backing.
Yeah, exactly. Because, again, there is help available, but a lot of tenants don't know this, and consequently, that legal representation going into a process, it does help provide a little bit of time, and that time would allow people to stay in their homes and to avoid homelessness, which I don't know that we've said enough about the drain that puts on social services as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the numbers are in and they're really clear. So the between, the city and the county and United Way, we spent about $3 million in the first 18 months of this program. We've gotten back more than $9 million, so about $9.3 million. And there's more on top of that because it's difficult to quantify, not having kids with elevated lead levels. It's difficult to quantify all these things that you get, these intangibles, when households are kept whole and they're able to keep a roof over their heads.
And this isn't just about dictating something to the landlord or giving something to the tenant, but let's bring municipal governments into this as well, because again, and here's the note from Governor Evers, from 2011 to 2019, the legislature passed more than 100 changes to landlord-tenant law, including eroding the ability of local governments to enact ordinances that regulate the landlord-tenant relationship and hindering the ability of cities like Milwaukee to manage problematic landlords. And so these changes that the governor is proposing for local governments would allow them to limit the types of information a landlord may obtain to consider a tenant, impose requirements on inspections, require a landlord to disclose certain information to tenants, require a landlord to report information to the municipality, and other things that local governments should do. Can you talk to us about the importance of giving local governments some autonomy back?
Absolutely. And, you know, and those are, again, all really common sense things, unless you're a landlord acting in bad faith and don't want those basic disclosures and everything else. There are states all across the U.S. that have implemented much more tenants' rights, or have just not rolled back the rights that everybody thinks they should have. But no, Milwaukee, really every municipality across the state should be able to regulate housing like we do so many other things, because the stakes are so high. And I think, having worked so closely with so many folks who have been evicted or faced eviction, and the folks doing that work, it's very clear that more just common sense regulation, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be habitable, really is in order here. And I'm glad that's part of it, because it's not just focusing on one policy, although the right to counsel is something really important. It's making sure that we have more supports upstream as well. I want tenants to be able to understand the contracts that they get into before they sign them. I want landlords ultimately to have to justify why they're kicking somebody out of a property if it's you know, for something other than just non-payment of rent. There are a lot of common sense things that we could be doing here. And my hope is that the landlords, some of whom are legislators, as you note, are able to put that aside and work in the interest of folks across the state.
The governor notes that in recent years, there have been countless instances of mothers, individuals with disabilities, survivors of domestic and intimate partner violence, low-income individuals and families, young people and students, aging and older adults, and many others who have been wrongfully evicted, taken advantage of by predatory landlords, and left to live and raise their families in dangerous and unhealthy conditions. Electrical fires and impacts on renters in the Milwaukee community, for example, have been the ongoing focus of a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigation series. So again, to your point, there are plenty of good landlords out there, but that's not enough to just take it on faith that all of these various groups that are, you know, essentially, you know, one crisis away from homelessness shouldn't have some balance in the relationship with their landlords.
Absolutely. And good housing policy is also good equity policy. We've seen from the numbers that are coming in from Milwaukee County that the vast majority of tenants are Black and women and heads of households, right? And they're people who face so many struggles already. We can help smooth those things out with good policy like this. And it just makes sense.
We're also going to talk, and I talked to Representative Haywood about it as well, but let's talk briefly about some of the other provisions in the governor's proposal, which include $150 million to provide funding to local municipalities to encourage the development and maintenance of additional affordable workforce housing, costs for infrastructure projects like water, sidewalks, and sewers, and to renovate and restore blighted residential properties with the goal of increasing available and affordable housing. And so both Representative Haywood and you are from the Milwaukee area. I've lived in the Milwaukee area and am quite aware that there's a lot of housing stock that, you know, with the right amount of renovation could again be not just affordable, you know, a dump is affordable, but affordable and attractive, and to help revitalize a neighborhood.
Absolutely. And there is a two-category system in Milwaukee and many other cities where you have access to some housing and it's not enough and it's not affordable and it's not in great condition if you don't have an eviction on your record. But once you do, the cost of what is available to you goes up. The quality of that housing goes down significantly. And it is horrific. So one of the things we'd like to see to supplement this is eviction expungement. So right now, an eviction will be on your record a very long time, bringing that period of time down. And I hope that the negotiation is not if that will happen, but how long it stays on your record would also help a lot of folks out. But one of the great things about the right to counsel that we didn't realize would happen when it passed was actually not just the availability of housing generally, but who owns it. So we saw during 2021 and 2022, all across the country, that more corporations were buying up residential housing stock, and that applied in every single major urban area out of the top 35 housing markets, except for Seattle, Washington, and Milwaukee, both of whom passed right to council during that period. And it looks like it made our housing stock less attractive to these predatory out-of-state landlords who are really not invested in our community. So we were the only two markets that actually had a higher proportion of residents owning where they live rather than corporations leasing them out to them. And I think there's something to be said for not only the availability of housing stock, but making sure that people own the houses that they're living in.
Representative Ryan Clancy from Milwaukee, thank you so much for telling us more about the issue of housing and with us as we looked at these results from the election. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much, Pat.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Really was not tough to come up with a theme for this segment here, and it has nothing to do with Carolyn Fiddler, who joins us now. Well, from the State House Action Newsletter, where we're going to go through basically a state by state horror show of activity, and it seems odd for us because in Wisconsin we have been so used for a dozen years of all kinds of Republican behavior that is abhorrent, that had thousands of people yelling shame at them, and yet it was shameless what they were doing. But now what we're seeing in some of these other states is just that's what this segment's going to sound like, is that's going what. But we have to start with Tennessee, but I actually have to tell a little story about what Robin Voss had to say about Tennessee coming up as well. Carolyn, pardon my manners. Boy. How are you? Welcome back.
No, I am here for whatever Robert, he probably was all like, yay, good job, Republicans.
Way to
expel two black men and keep a white woman in our state house for being upset about kids getting murdered.
Yeah. I'm going to go backwards. We'll get to the root, instance in Tennessee in a second, but I have to mention that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss reacted to a tweet from former President Obama, who put up, "What happened in Tennessee is the latest example of a broader erosion of civility and democratic norms. Silencing those who disagree with us is a sign of weakness, not strength, and it won't lead to progress." Robin Voss puts it up and says, "Those statements would have a lot more credibility if he said them when the situation didn't fit his ideological narrative, i.e. the daily attacks on free speech and the silencing of conservatives on campuses all across the USA. Parenthetically, give me a break. But the Assembly Colleges and Universities Committee yesterday actually did hold a hearing on that topic, where we got to hear people say that they felt intimidated and silenced on college campuses, when what they were upset about was other people expressing their free speech right to say, right, you know, we're kind of against hatred. Members, Carolyn, do you want to, what is the root? The root of all this is the tragedy of the Nashville school shooting, isn't it?
Well, I mean, depending on the root of what specifically, the root of this particular instance was, yes, the shooting in Nashville that left three children dead and three adults dead. But the root of the larger problem is Republicans' desperation to hold on to power when they see it slipping away from them. But that's a much bigger conversation.
Oh, much. I mean, but so you had this shooting, and much like in Florida and other places, you then had people marching, primarily young people who are sick, just sick, yeah, of the lack of action on this, which, I mean, my words, nobody else's, but to me, that we have moved into a gun worship phase for a lot of these folks, that they would rather worship automatic weapons than protect the lives of the children of their community. And so before any of this expulsion talk happened, you had a state capitol in Nashville that was already the site of some very large protests saying, do something.
Yeah. The legislature was on a path to actually further loosen gun laws in the state. And to be clear, like when it comes to gun worship, we're talking about like assault rifles, like,
yeah,
one of the members.
Not hunting rifles or something. No.
No, like hunting rifles didn't murder those kids in Tennessee. It was an AR-15.
All right. So what did these three legislators do?
Well, so the shooting was, gosh, a week ago Monday, which feels like longer ago than it was because time doesn't mean anything. But then later in the week, Thursday specifically, like hundreds of protesters came to the Capitol. They were loud. They were aggressive. And this upset Republicans because they have really tender sensibilities. They just can't stand being yelled at for, you know, doing or not doing the things that they're doing or not doing. Heaven forfend. So they were upset about this. They expelled people from the gallery of both the House and the Senate because they were getting really loud. But as part of this loudness, various lawmakers, three in particular, two young black men and a white woman, came to the well, which is this area right in front of the speaker's dais in the House, and they protested. They protested loudly. One of them had a megaphone. But they were up there. They were out of order. They were violating House rules of decorum.
Decorum
and
decorum,
right? Because like six people are dead, and so let's worry about manners. And Republicans like lost their minds. They got so upset about this, they compared it to J6, which suddenly is a bad thing to them when they can compare
right
Democrats. Although like no one got hurt, there was no violence, there were no weapons. But so they got so upset about this. And so on Monday, three articles of expulsion were filed. This Monday, a week after the shooting, three articles of expulsion were filed against these three members. And those articles of expulsion were heard yesterday, about 5 hours for all three of them. And they all got up and gave very eloquent defenses of what they did and how, like, this, how is this actually wrong? One in particular, the white lady, Gloria Johnson, she was like, I was just standing there. I'm not saying that my colleagues did anything wrong because they did not. But, you know, all these charges laid out in the articles of expulsion, they're just lies. And the debate was something to see. These people were all very eloquent and spoke in defense of not really themselves, but what they were doing, what they stood for in terms of protecting children. And
making the point that this is not a time for decorum, because you had this a belittling, condescending tone from the Republicans who were speaking. You know, one of them saying, you know, he does not even, I need a foghorn leghorn voice here. He does not even recognize that what he did was wrong. So not to expel him would simply invite him and his colleagues to engage in mutiny on the House floor. Mutiny. I'm sorry. Mutiny.
Republicans have a supermajority in the state House. Like, what are they going to do? Y'all,
that's the one said, well, he should just write a bill. That's how you fix things here, is you write a bill.
Republicans won't hear bills that Democratic legislators file.
Right. I mean,
like, they've been silencing Democrats for a very long time in the Tennessee House.
Honestly, I mean, look, the American Revolution was a case where you said, you know, we're not going to write a bill and say pretty please. We need action. And if we need to be louder about it, we will. Now, we've got a whole bunch of other states to get to. So I'll wrap up by saying these two members. It's actually in Tennessee's case, it's the County Board of Commissioners that will fill the vacancy. They can send these two right back. And, you know, and they say you can't be expelled twice for the same offense, but I'm sure Republicans will make up something else anyway.
Right. Like broken taillight.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. So again, between, you know, the racism, the cluelessness, the tone deafness about the gun issue, that's our headline out of Tennessee. But there's so many things here in Florida. I already mentioned back to guns. Again, you had people protesting after Parkland. They took over the state capitol in Tallahassee. The legislature responded with a big middle finger, and Governor DeSantis signed a bill with basically open carry and open concealed carry. No training, no permit.
Just terrifying on its face, no matter what else is going on in the world. Like, I don't like going around and thinking that people might have guns around me and they're not trained to use them. And like, who knows what can happen at any given point in time anywhere, especially in Florida, let's be real.
So let's see. I've got on my list, see if we can get to Idaho, Kansas, there's Indiana. Montana even. Where do you want to start?
Actually, I'd rather start in North Carolina.
Oh, yes, North Carolina. Let's do that one. We've got six states to get in 6 minutes. Let's do it.
Well, North Carolina, an aggrieved Democrat, decided she wanted to switch parties because, I don't know, she didn't feel properly.
She got feelings
hurt by her Democratic colleagues or something. So she gave Republicans in North Carolina a supermajority in the state house. They already had it in the state Senate. And now Democratic Governor Cooper can't do anything. And the last time this was the case was 2017. And back then, Democrats at least had a majority on the state Supreme Court. So now Republicans in North Carolina can do whatever they want. And things are going to get very, very, very bad there.
They are. And here's another area related to, it's probably talking about abortion rights here in North Carolina. Meanwhile, in Idaho, the Republican governor has implemented an interstate travel restriction on abortion care. We're actually trying to contain and regulate the travel of women and their allies when it comes to abortion care in Idaho.
Yeah, no, that doesn't seem constitutional at all. And also, like, just say you want to secede if you want to secede, y'all. I mean,
There's enough of them. Yeah. I mean, look, they talk about that all the time. And, you know, if there were a way to do it without bloodshed and let them discover after a few years that they're, that they are takers, not givers, you know, in terms of federal assistance and, you know, what they contribute to the national economy, I'd be all for it. But I'm not confident that we could really do that. So how about we try to play by the rules we have, like democracy? In Kansas, Republicans have authorized genital inspections of children in order for kids to play sports. Why?
Because Republicans are afraid of LGBTQ people. they are afraid of what they don't completely understand. They're monsters. The Democratic governor in Kansas vetoed the bill, but Republicans have veto-proof majorities in both chambers, and they just overrode it. And now, trans kids don't have a safe place to be in Kansas.
And the amazing, again, the bullying, it is so reminiscent of, I mean, just substitute, you know, Jews for trans, you know, in terms of, you know, villainizing an entire group of people that are doing nothing to you but living their lives. But you always feel like you have to punch down. And that's the big thing here is doing that. In back to Florida, oh God, how'd they make the list twice? The legislature wants to prohibit female students from discussing menstrual cycles in school. What the hell's that?
That even shocked me, and nothing shocks me out of state legislatures. I've been doing this a long time.
Apparently it's icky. You know, the old white guy who's putting up the bill admitted that, yes, if you are younger than sixth grade, you can't talk to those young girls about periods and their menstrual cycle. God. Right about the time they got questions.
Right. They're worried they're going to start, you know, bleeding in the middle of class. And like, no, it's a horror show for girls that age. It's very unsettling. They need to talk about this. It was a long time ago for me, but oh my God.
In Indiana, the Republican governor has signed into law a total ban on gender affirming care for minors, even those already currently transitioning. Again, kind of in that same category. We don't understand it and we don't approve of it. And, you know, it just takes me back to, and look, folks, I'm not exaggerating here. What we used to do in this world to left-handed people to try to make them right-handed, that there was something demonic about them. Look it up. It's crazy. And in Montana, off on a different subject altogether, for one election and one election only to target John Tester, the senator there, what are they, Carolyn, they're bringing a jungle primary, but just one time?
Yeah. They really just don't care about democracy. By they, I mean Republicans. They're just upending it wherever they can to suit their needs.
They're just, again, for one election only, they're changing the rules so that instead of one Democrat or a Democratic primary and a Republican primary, it's everybody's in and the top two vote getters of whatever party. And that way they're hoping that John Tester, the Democrat, you know, comes in third and they just get enough Republican voters, you know, to keep him from running in the general election, which, look, if you were doing it permanently, you could go, all right, well, you know, at least they're making a change. But the fact that they're so blatant doing it for just one election tells you all you need to know.
Yep. They hate not being in complete charge of Montana. They think they should be. Never mind that voters, you know, elected John Tester. And if they choose to do so again, that is absolutely their right. But Republicans don't want them to have that right. for some reason.
No, they do not. And, you know, let us not forget, concluding with Wisconsin, there's nothing in the headlines this week, but they're not off the hook at all for everything from Act 10 to still blocking more than 100 confirmations from Governor Tony Evers, the duly elected two times governor of the state of Wisconsin, and essentially firing one of his cabinet officers because they got their feelings hurt. So, again, this is when you can't win on the issues, you know. Statehouse Action is where you get this laundry list and more wonderfully written. Statehouseaction.substack.com. It's so great to have you back here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
We're going to find happy news at some point. It's just that this week, take it easy. Enjoy yourself. And we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Carolyn. We'll take a break. We'll look at this day in history coming up next. You're Up North. I think this will ever not be on my all-time list of favorite albums. Bonnie Raitt, Nick of Time, title track from that album. That album went to number one on this day in 1990. How can it be 33 years already? And if you if you've not listened to Nick of Time and some of the other tracks on there, do yourself a favor. Download that. Stream it. Do that today. Let's see, from the history books. Now I had to double check things here because originally, as often happens, Aaron puts the first notes in here and then I go through it. And he put up that on this day, the eruption of Mount Vesuvius devastated Naples. And then it said 1906. And I'm like, I don't know that that's right. And of course I had to look back and realize what I'm thinking of is the big one in the year AD 79. That destroyed Pompeii.
Right. That's but the that, really but, big one.
Yeah. But Vesuvius has erupted many times. It's one of the most dangerous in the world. The note here says 3 million people live near enough to be affected by an eruption, 600,000 of them in the danger zone. I have been to Pompeii on a cruise that we took once. We made a stop there, some other stops in Italy. It is amazing. It's also, by the way, speaking of Naples nearby, seriously, the best pizza I have ever had, made right there in front of you in a brick oven. All the food in Italy. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? But you did look up at Vesuvius all that time and you just go, you know, you kind of feel like you're playing with fire. No pun intended. On this day in 1999, folks were listening to Shania Twain's third album, Come On Over, which included this track.
Let's go, girls.
Come On Over was certified diamond on this day in 1999, making her the first ever female artist to have two diamond-selling albums in a row. That's many millions of albums. Billie Holiday, the jazz singer, born on this day in 1915. She passed away in 1959. Freddie Hubbard, jazz trumpeter and composer. Freddie Hubbard, born on this day in 1938. He passed away in 2008. Francis Ford Coppola is 84 years old today, director of The Godfather and many others. Again, 84 years old for Francis Ford Coppola. And one passing of note, 3 years ago, acclaimed singer-songwriter John Prine, who collaborated occasionally with Bonnie Raitt, whom we heard earlier, died at 73 after coming down with COVID, one of the part of the first wave of celebrity deaths that happened earlier in the coronavirus pandemic. All right, you're familiar with Hall & Oates. Most of those songs are sung by Daryl Hall. A couple of them are sung by John Oates, including Possession Obsession. Let you get back, you could say. John Oates is 75 years old today, the other half of Hall & Oates. I know he's still active and busy. It's just that he doesn't have the same kind of TV show that Daryl Hall does, Live from Daryl's House, which is, again, one of my favorites. I don't watch it regularly, but sometimes I'll binge a couple of them. Just a fantastic show. I wish there were more shows like Live from Daryl's House. More birthdays. Jackie Chan is 69 years old today, and he can still beat you up. Russell Crowe is 59 today, and he can still beat you up. A couple of tough guys having birthdays today. Another album hitting number one of note, the Doobie Brothers album, Minute by Minute, was number one on this day in 1979. You know, at this point, the Doobie Brothers were clearly the group fronted by Michael McDonald. The Tom Johnson years were behind them, where I know people had somewhat of an identity crisis going, wait, is this the Doobie Brothers, the rock and roll band, or is this the Doobie Brothers, the yacht rock mellow tunes band? And it worked for both of them. And, you know, Tom Johnson eventually came back to the band as well. And I know they're still touring. I saw them along with Donald Fagen of Steely Dan a few years back at a concert. And again, 1979, Minute by Minute, was the number one album.
It's too bad Carolyn Fiddler isn't still here. Hopefully she's listening.
I'm sure she is. She can't get enough yacht rock. God bless her. Prince released his debut album For You on this day in 1978. On this day in 2001, NASA launched the Mars Odyssey orbiter. And on this day 1 year ago, Ketanji Brown Jackson was confirmed as the first female Black justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. And that takes us to the topic, speaking of the Supreme Court, of a story that came up yesterday by the site ProPublica about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas has a friend. This friend's name is Harlan Crowe. Harlan Crowe is a billionaire and a very active Republican donor. Now, Harlan Crowe has never directly had a case before the Supreme Court with Clarence Thomas, but enough of his allies sure have over time. And ProPublica has found, by talking to a whole lot of people, the many, 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 many luxury vacations that Clarence Thomas has gone on with his friend, with his buddy, Harlan Crowe, that they have been on luxury yachts, private jets. There's a private resort that they go to. And again, almost none of this has been reported. And that's in part because the Supreme Court justices don't exactly have tight rules on ethics and reporting things that could conceivably be, you know, a conflict of interest. There are financial disclosure forms, but there does not appear to be, shall we say, much transparency or accountability that's involved in it. So ProPublica let us know just how much the Clarence Thomas and his wife, Ginny, who has been active in the insurrection, have received from this billionaire friend. They looked at flight records, internal documents distributed to Harlan Crowe's employees, interviews with dozens of people ranging from the staff of his super yacht to members of a secret bohemian club to an Indonesian scuba diving instructor. That's the power of journalism when done right. When you look through the records, when you talk to the people, and you can put together a story about a federal judge who sits in, as they say, a unique position of public trust. They have lifetime tenure, a privilege that's intended to insulate them from the potential corruption of politics, unless you're directly engaged in it. And again, it's not that we didn't know who Clarence Thomas was from an ideological standpoint. It's not that he's not entitled to have friends or even have, you know, go on trips with friends, but there has to be a line at some point with a billionaire, with the super yachts, with the private jets, and with all of the activity that Harlan Crowe was involved in politically, that has to make you wonder if at some point between Clarence and Ginny Thomas, isn't it time for the U.S. Senate to take a closer look at what all they do? More in our next hour. This is Up North News Radio for a Friday.